The Parsha, of course, Parshas Korach, is really the beginning of a whole new world. And I wanted to talk about that new world. Of course, as we've discussed throughout Sefer Bamidbar is the book of rebellion. Sefer Bamidbar is the book where Klal Yisrael was ready, set, and go to enter Eretz Yisrael. Of course, that sort of didn't happen, most primarily because of what happened in last week's Parsha, Parsha Shlach, with the Meraglim. But let's review for a moment, really, year 1 and year 39, the majority, the lion's share of the generation of the Midbar, who of course all die out and don't enter Eretz Yisrael as a result of the Chet HaMeraglim. What's the essence? Is there one thing, is there a common denominator in terms of what frustrated the people and why they were consistently rebelling? I'd like to take a look briefly at five cases, five events that take place in Sefer Bamidbar, three of them in Parshas Bishalach, one of them in Parshas Bahaloscha, and finally the fifth one in Parshas Shlach, last week's Parsha, and compare all five of those classic events, complaints that the Jewish people placed upon Moshe and Aaron, and contrast it to what takes place in Parshas Korach. Because as you'll see momentarily, Parshas Korach, the rebellion of Korach, Va'adaso, is categorically and fundamentally different than anything we have ever seen thus far in the generation of the Bimba. So let's go back for a moment to Parshas Bishalach. I'm not going to send you scrambling to look for these psukim inside, but I'm going to read to you a series of complaints in Perek Tezayin, Perek Yudzayin, where Bnei Yisrael really are frustrated, angered, and upset. And you'll see that indeed there is really something very, very similar with the complaints that Klal Yisrael issue against Moshe and Aaron. The first, of course, is immediately after Matan Torah, after Kriyas Yamsuf, prior to Matan Torah, just a few days, 3 days after the sea split, some days, really, after Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim and saw Makos Bechoros and the great miracles, the Aseres HaMakos. The pasuk says in Perek Tezayin of Sefer Shmos, Psukim Beis and Gimel, Vayilonu Kolados Bnei Yisrael Val Moshe Val Aaron Bamidbar. All of the assembly of the Israelites complained against Moshe and against Aaron. Vayomer Alem, what did they say to Moshe and to Aaron? Mi Yitin Ma'asein Abiyad Hashem Beretz Mitzrayim. If only we would have died in the land of Egypt. B'shiftein al asira basar, we were sitting on the fat of the land by the pot of the meat. B'chalnu lechem lasov, we had plenty of bread to eat. We were very satiated. Kiotzeisem osana lamidbar zeh lahamisas kol hakol zabarav. Did you take us out of Egypt that we should die of hunger, of thirst, of dehydration in this desert? So it's very clear that this is the first protest, the first rebellion, the first sense of frustration that the Jewish people issue and express and articulate is very clearly all as a result of lack of food and water. They don't have their basic needs taken care of. And that's the complaint, and that's what Klal Yisrael is missing. And if you continue in Parag Yud Zayin of Sefer Shmos, Psukim Aleph and Beis, Vayisu Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael Min Bin Bar Sin L'Maseim Al Pi Hashem V'Yachal Bir Fidim. The last stop in Sefer, in Parshas Bishalach, prior to Amalek coming, Bnei Yisrael settled in a place called Refidim. Vein Ma'im L'Shtosam, there's no water. Vayarev Ha'am In Moshe V'Yom Tumul L'Anam Ma'im V'Nishteh. And what did they say to Moshe? Give us water so we can drink. So all of Parshas Bishalach, those two cases, and there's another as well, and the early months and the early weeks, really, and really this is all one of the Midbar, the frustration, the anger that Klal Yisrael have is their reaction. And what prompted their reaction is as a result of not having their basic needs taken care of. In Parshas Kisis, however, if you take a more careful look at the Chet HaEgel, you'll see it's not a frustration of lack of water and food, but it's something similar. And listen to what the Psukim say, preparing us for the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. Vayar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe. The people saw that Moshe was delayed in descending from Har Sinai. Vayakel ha'am al Aaron, and the people charge and gather around the Aaron. Vayomer lo, kuma seilanu Elokim ashi Elohim asher yelchu lefreim. Make for us a God who will go before us. Ki zemosha ha'ish asher helanu meretz Mitzrayim lo yadanu mahayilo. We don't know what happened to Moshe. Please, Aaron, make for us a golden calf. Now here you see that there's not a frustration of a lack of food and water, But there still is a very basic common denominator between Parshas Bishalach and Parshas Kisisa. Why are Bnei Yisrael rebelling? What's the essence? What's at the heart of the rebellion? Is it really that they're thirsty, dehydrated, and hungry? Is that really what it is? They just want food to eat? Maybe. That's what Parshas Bishalach seems to indicate. But Parshas Kisisa and the Chet Egel seem to indicate something else. And what's really at the bottom, right, the psychology at the essence and at the crux of what's frustrating the Jewish people is fear. Fear. They're scared. The Jewish people are scared. They've been taken care of in the Egyptian empire. They've been taken care of in the Egyptian kingdom. It's true they're slaves, but part of slave mentality is a sense of comfort, and you know that everything you have will be taken care of. You don't have to worry about your food. You don't have to room food and board and whatever your responsibilities are. The children are taken care of. You're taken care of. You have to do your job, but if you do your job, you will be taken care of. What takes place in the Midbar is absolute pandemonium, is fear, is the frustration that we're not being taken care of and we need to rely on God. And of course, over time in the Midbar, the Mun came, the Slav came, the Be'er came, the Ananim came that covered and took care of the Jewish people. But at the crux and at the core, at the essence of the heart and soul and cognitively, what was really frustrating the Jewish people, and it expressed itself in food and in water and in the Chet HaEgel, but really what was happening was absolutely, positively a sense of frustration because they were fear. They were scared and they were frightened. If you continue and look in Sefer Bamidbar, we'll segue from Sefer Shmos to Sefer Bamidbar, you'll see the very same thing. And really, if you take a look in Parshas Bahalosecha, which is somewhat the continuation of Parshas Bishalach, however, it's now we're in year 40, we're 39 years later, the complaints continue. And here the Torah tells us, Vahi Bashana Hashen, it's rather year 2, Bachodesh Hasheni, in the second month. So in year 2, month 2, Be'esim Bachodesh Naleh Anan, the Anan started to move. And what happened as soon as the Anan started to move? Klal Yisrael, so we're ready to enter Eretz Yisrael. And as soon as we're ready, what happens in Perek Yud Aleph, Sefer Bamidbar, we read it 2 weeks ago, Vayhi Ham Kim Misonin, the people complain. Ra Be'ozne Hashem, Vayishma Hashem, Vayichar Apo, Vativar Bam'esh Hashem, Vatochel B'Kzeh Machaneh. The people get hungry, they get frustrated, they complain, and Hashem is angered. And Moshe screams and cries to God and says, please Hashem, help the Jewish people. They call this place Tavera, Kivara Vamesh Hashem. There was a fire that went burned up against them, and ultimately it was put to rest, and that place was called Tavera. Again, Klal Yisrael complained. And immediately after that, the Pasuk tells us in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Dalet in Sefer Bamidbar, Ha'asafsuf asher bekirbo hisavu taiva. The Asafsuf also began to complain that their physical needs were not being taken care of. Vayeshu vayivchu gam b'nei Yisrael. Vayomru miyachileinu basar. Who's going to feed us meat? So we continue not only in year 1, but in year 2. And if you continue looking, this is really what troubles and causes Bnei Yisrael the issues, the problems that they have throughout the next 38 years. Who's going to take care of us? Who's going to give us meat to eat? Zacharnu asadaga, remember the fish, asher nochal b'mitzrayim chinam, free. Vesakashuim, vesavatichim, vesachatzim, vesabitzam, vesashuim, all of the produce that we had. Vata nafsheni uveshein kol bilti lamanin, and all we have is the man. So again, here you see, for a fourth and a fifth time, Bnei Yisrael continue to complain their physical needs are not being taken care of. But again, at the heart and at the crux of what's missing is really a sense of fear, of scare, because they have to rely. They have to be waiting for this man. They're not being simply handed their meals, but they have to rely on God. And in last week's Parsha, it continues with a little bit of a different angle, but it's the same issue. Parsha Shlach is the Parsha of the Miraglim. And in the beginning of the parasha, Moshe acquiesces to the request that the Jewish people have to send spies to the land of Israel. But again, what's the reason for this rebellion? What's the reason for this pandemonium? What's the reason for this anger that the Jewish people are expressing? It's fear, fear, fear. Not only are we scared to enter Egypt to be in the Midbar, But now you want us to leave the Midbar and to send us to Eretz Yisrael? It's two grades more difficult. Mitzrayim, we had everything taken care of. The Mitzrayim would give us our meals and would feed us and we're bored and we'd have it everywhere we need. In the Midbar, at least we had God, even though we weren't prepared, we weren't ready to rely on it. But now you're going to send us to Eretz Yisrael and we need to take care of ourselves. So this fear epidemic is really, really challenging. And it's completely taking over the Jewish people, and it's frightened and it's scaring them. And that's the sense of the rebellions that take place. So if you look really in all of Sefer Shmos and Sefer Bamidbar, what characterizes the rebellions in, say, in the Dor HaMidbar, these 40 years, is absolutely positively a sense of fear, of being scared. And this is where we find ourselves now in the beginning of Parshas Korach, a new rebellion. But if you take a look in Parshas Korach carefully, and you begin to look at the opening psukim in Parshas Korach, it's a very different type of rebellion. And this is a point Rabbi Soloveitchik made, and he used to make this in his lectures. It's printed in some of his works, where he notes that Korach is really a watershed event in the life and times of Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, and there's a categorical shift which takes place between the complaints, the rebellions, the rabble-rousers of the Midbar, and now with Korach. He refers to it as the first conspiracy. Korach was a conspiracy. It was a full-fledged conspiracy where there was not a sense of a frightening situation. It wasn't just a mob mentality that was frustrated without food and without water. But Korach's rebellion was fundamentally different, and at least for a few different ways, and I'll show you that in the Pesukim. The first and most obvious, that the rebellion of Korach was not there to gratify the very basic needs and the drives of hunger, of dehydration. There's nothing happening that you see at all in Parshas Korach that indicates any level of a sense of hedonistic pleasures or the necessity to take care of basic human desire, food, water, clothing, back to Mitzrayim. There's no discussion about that whatsoever. Thus, there must be something else happening here in Parshas Korach, and of course the question is what? Number two, as opposed to all of the other events which I shared with you thus far, in Parshas Beshalach, in Parshas Bahalosch, in Parshas Shlach, whether it's the Meraglim, what's their Egel Hazav, whether it's the complaints in Rafidim, Midbar Sin, or any of those places, there the majority of Klal Yisrael was involved. You remember the psukim that I read? Vayilonu Bnei Yisrael, Kol Yisrael. The Jewish people in an entirety fought God, fought Moshe, and fought Aaron. Here, that's not the case. Here it's Korach va'Adasa. Now we're going to have to understand who exactly Korach va'Adasa were, but if you take a look in the Psukim, the largest count that you'll have in terms of rebels is 253 people. It's the 250 men, right? The Reish Nun Ish, who we'll talk about in a moment. It's Korach for 251, Dasan ve'Aviram for 253. Therefore, as opposed to all of the other rebellions of the Dor HaMidbar, where the entirety and the gamut of the Jewish people and the entire assembly of Klal Yisrael was involved in the rebellion, here it's a small segment. And interestingly enough, if you look in the Pesukim in the beginning, who were these people? So if you take a look in Pasuk Aleph and Pasuk Beis, we'll read together. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehas ben Levi. So number one, it's Korach, and the Torah goes through his lineage. V'dasan v'avirim, so there are three people. B'nei Eliyah v'on ben Peles b'nei Ruven. So it's 254, on ben Peles. V'yakum l'fnei Moshe v'anoshim b'nei Yisrael chamishim amasayim. 250, plus Korach, plus Dasan v'avirim, plus on ben Peles, who ultimately dropped out of the rebellion, as Chazal point out. So it starts with 254, and it goes to 253. Who were these people? Who were these 250 men? Nisiei Eda, Kriei Moed, Anshei Sheim, leaders of the assembly. They were those men who were summoned from the meeting, men of well regard, of high regard, men of renown. So you're talking about really the aristocracy of Bnei Yisrael who were fighting Moshe and Aaron, while the entirety, the large and the lion's share of the Jewish people were not expressing any frustration, any anger, and any rebellion whatsoever. If you take a look in the Pesukim, in the beginning of Perek Tezayin, chapter 16 in Sefer B'Midbar, which is the beginning of Parshas Korach, it's on page 820 in the Stone Chumash, you'll note that both the Chumash, the Torah, as well as Rashi, seem to indicate that it's one mass rebellion. These 253 men all have one purpose. And what's the purpose? If you read the Pasuk Gimel, the Torah tells us this is the reason why they rebelled. Nothing to do with dehydration, nothing to do with lack of food, but a whole different picture. Vayikalu al Moshe vel Aaron, right? The same word that we saw in Bishalach, in Kisisa, in Bahaloscha, in Shalach, Vayikalu al Moshe vel Aaron. There is a sense of a mad rebellion, of a mad mentality. So they gather on Moshe and on Aaron. Vayomra aleihem, Rav lachem, here it's a philosophical argument. It has nothing to do with food and water. It has nothing to do with fear, which is at the crux of everything else that's going on in the Midbar. But here it's a philosophical problem. Korach v'adaso, Korach dasan v'aviram, and the 250 men seem to be disturbed by the fact that Moshe and Aaron have taken all of the positions of power. Moshe as the leader, Aaron is the Kohen, Korach doesn't have anything. The claim that Korach va'adaso make is kol ha'edah kulam kidoshim esochem Hashem. All Jews are holy. Lama tisnasu al kal Hashem. Why do you make yourself the leader of the people? Why do you exalt yourself over others? And if you take a look in Rashi, Rashi notes that Korach had a very basic problem. His problem was, as the Torah reports, Korach was the son of Yitzhar. Yitzhar was the son of Kehas. Kehas had four children, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. Amram, of course, his two sons were Moshe and Aaron. And Korach understood that his father, Yitzhar, who was second in line to Amram, his son, which is he, Korach, should be privileged to receive a greater sense of authority and of leadership. If Amram's eldest son Moshe becomes the leader, Kaviyachol the Melech, the king of the Jewish people, Yitzhar, the next brother of Amram, his son, who is Korach, should become the Kohen. Therefore, what Korach was really troubled by is, why does Amram, his uncle, have two sons who took leadership positions? Why do the two brothers, Moshe and Aaron, seem to be leading the Jewish people? Allow Amram's son Moshe to be the leader, and allow Yitzhar's son, who is Korach, to be the Kohen. Thus, what really Korach was bothered by was a political and philosophical and a problem. It was a familial issue. And maybe he was correct. There was a point that Korach had. But Korach was not disturbed by the classic problems that were troubling the Jewish people in the Midbar. He was troubled by philosophy. And he built up the aristocrats, the Nesi'e Ha'eda, the chiefs of the tribes, the heads of the Jewish people, to hear his taina, to hear his claim. And he garnered support from the top, from the creme de la creme, the highest levels of Jewish society in the Midbar, the top of the class of Jewish society. Just like in Parsha Shlach last week, we saw that the 12 leaders were the ones who were sent on the espionage mission to go into Eretz Yisrael. The same thing happens here. Thus, the impression you get from the Torah, from the Chumash, and from Rashi, is that these three groups really came together. Korach ve'adaso, the 250 men, and Dasan Ravim, all came together supporting Korach. The impression you get that Korach was a very charismatic person. He was a person with a lot of power, and a person who was able to really garner the support of the greatest people that existed in Klal Yisrael. And Korach understood that the way for him to be successful was to grab the top of society and to work with them and to rebel against Moshe, where really the lion's share, the majority of the Jewish people, were hunky-dory. They were very fine and very happy as long as their food was coming, as long as the man, the slav, the be'er, and the nanim were working. They didn't complain. Korach was coming from a completely different place. That's the impression you get from the Chumash and from Rashi. What I'd like to share with you this morning is a comment of the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the great Volozhiner Rosh Hashiva, and his classic commentary on Torah, Ha'emek Davar, as well as the Chassam Sofer, Rav Moshe Sofer, and his commentary, Torah's Moshe al HaTorah, both point out something so powerfully important that will change your understanding of Parshas Korach forever and forever. And they explain that really Korach Dasan ve'avira, and the 250 men had very, very different political gains from the rebellion. And they didn't have the same position as Korach. Each of them had a different problem. Korach was a genius in that he was able to create a stronger, more powerful rebellion by gaining different groups and populations that were disturbed by what was happening, bring them together, and then successfully he would be able to usurp the power of Moshe and Aaron. But Korach wasn't just smart in terms of gathering the groups together that he did. He waited for the perfect opportunity. And the Ramban notes that Parshas Korach follows Parshas Shlach. He waited for Moshe's downfall. Moshe's greatest political downfall, of course, was the Chet HaMeraglim. It was that sin which he ultimately caused the punishment of the Jewish people not to enter the Midbar and not to enter Eretz Yisrael, and at the same time was the punishment that Moshe receives. And as a result, Korach waited for the perfect time, says the Ramban, in order to make sure that the people said, hey, maybe this Moshe is not for us. He could have done a better job. He didn't necessarily have to set us up to go into Eretz Yisrael on this espionage mission, which secured us and locked us into the Midbar for 40 years. Why did Moshe do that? And the thinkers, the scholars, the elite of the Jewish people in the Midbar understood Korach had a point. And they heard his implicit message. And they understood very clearly that there was something earth-shattering that was going to take place. And Korach had the ability to gather the elite and the aristocrats of the Jewish people, number one, and number two, to wait for the perfect time to rebel. Korach had this plan from the beginning of the Midbar. Korach was with the Jewish people when they were leaving Mitzrayim. He saw Kriyas Yamsuf. He saw the Aseres Hamakos. That's not going to be the time to usurp the power of Moshe. That's when Moshe was at his height. That's when Moshe was going on to Har Sinai. He was having a conversation with God. So Korach waited for the moment where it would be most powerful for him to rebel. And that's right now after the Chet HaMeraglim. The Jewish people are down. Moshe is down. Think about it more recently in history. When the Jewish people were in their worst element, that's when great Jewish leaders come to try to inspire them, to push them in a particular way. That's, of course, Shabtai Tzvi. Shabtai Tzvi did the very same thing. And the downfall of Shabtai Tzvi and the reaction to Shabtai Tzvi was picking up on a group of people who thought that they were really at the end of days. And they understood that the end is coming and the end didn't come. And therefore, Shabtai Tzvi took advantage of the masses and tried to be able to turn them and to push them in a different way. And of course, the end is well known. Shabtai Tzvi was not the Mashiach. And of course, Klal Yisrael were depressed and were angered. And that brought much of Hasidicism into its birth. But here you see that's what Korach was doing. But Korach did more than that. He chose the exact correct people for this rebellion. The 250 men, who were these people? The Torah just reports to us in Pasuk Beis in Parshas Korach, Anashim b'nei Yisrael chamishim asai, nisiye eida kriye moed an sheshem. They were great people, but was there any common denominator between them? So the Chasam Sofer says, yes, you know who they were? They were all bechorim. They were all firstborns, and as you well known, originally, the bechor was supposed to be the group that was supposed to serve in the Mishkan. And as a result of the Chet HaEgel that was taken away from them and was given to Shevet Levi. So Korach gathered the 250 men who wanted service. They wanted to be the Leviim. They wanted to be in the Mishkan. And if Korach wanted to be the Kohen, and if they wanted to be the Leviim, this would be a very good group. But then Korach understood it's not enough. Because the 250 men, they can't rebel by themselves. They don't have the power. You know, I can't do this by myself because I'm only one person. I need the help of who? Dasan ve'Aviram. What do we know about Dasan ve'Aviram? We know about Dasan ve'Aviram since Parsha Shmos. Dasan ve'Aviram are the two individuals who followed the Jewish people from Yetzias Mitzrayim all the way up until Knesset to Eretz Yisrael. They're rabble-rousers. They're troublemakers. They're scrapers. They're the people who are always fighting the undercurrent. They're fighting the aristocracy. They're fighting Bnei Yisrael. They're always getting in arguments with other, and they're causing, wreaking havoc in the Midbar. So now Korach has aligned two different political factions who are unable to successfully usurp Moshe's power, and he's going to be the one to bring the three of them together. So Dasan Vavir, everybody knows them. We know about them since Sefer Shmos. They can't recreate the rebellion. They could cause frustration. They could cause anger. They're very good at doing what they're doing in terms of wreaking havoc and causing havoc. But nobody's going to listen to them. They're just a nuisance. And they're always causing pain. They can't do it by themselves. The 250 men, they're scholars. They're Bechorim. They want to serve in the Mishkan. They don't have the knowledge, the power to create a rebellion. That's not something that they can do. So Korach says, I'm going to come and I'm going to be the hero. I'm going to bring Dasan Vaviram, who are the scrapers. I'm going to bring the 250 men who are the aristocracy, who are the Bechorim, who want to serve in the Mishkan. And I, through my political success, and I, through my philosophical power, and I, through my articulate way and my genius, will be able to bring these three groups together. So thus, according to the Chasam Sofer and the Netziv, this is not simply Korach va'Adasa. These are three different factions with three very different initiatives, with three very different agendas, with three very different goals. But Korach has the political genius to be able to bring them all together at the right time. That's what Korach does. And if you look in the Psukim throughout Perek Tezayin, chapter 16 of Parshas Korach, you'll note, you always see the words Korach, you see the words Dasan ve'Aviram, and the Reish Nun, the 250 men. And never are they in together, never are they in the same order, because each of them have a different program, each of them have a different reason for coming and fighting. Korach just has the ability to bring them together in a cluster to try to fight and usurp the power. The Netziv actually adds, importantly enough, unlike the Chasam Sofer, that the 250 people, they really had very good intentions. They really were l'shem shamayim. You know who they were similar to, says the Netziv? Nadav and Avihu. They had very similar interests, and we'll see momentarily another similarity between Nadav and Avihu and the 250 men. They wanted to serve in the Mishkan. Nadav and Avihu wanted to bring in Asia Zara. They wanted to come closer to Hashem. The 250 men also wanted to come closer to Hashem. They were Bechorim. They should be the ones privy to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mishkan. But that was taken away from them as a result of the Chet Egel giving to the Levim. They want that back. They want to serve Hashem. They were coming for real, true, altruistic reasons, L'shem Shamayim. Korach was coming for just the opposite. Korach was a kavod seeker. He was seeking honor. He was seeking fame. He was seeking that Moshe should plummet and Aaron should plummet and he should take over the political power of the Jewish people. Two polar opposites. And Korach, of course, understood that in order to succeed, he needed Dasan Vaviram to try to excite everybody and to get all of the assembly and to get all Klal Yisrael worked up. So these 250 men had a very different objective than Korach. They had different personalities, different agenda, different goals. They were l'shem shamayim. The problem is, oy l'rasha v'oy l'shcheinu, as Rashi says. Woe unto one whose neighbor is also connected to a rasha, because that's going to get them in trouble as well. And that's the reason why you see, in the opening pasuk of Parshas Korach, who else joins with Korach? Dasan ve'Aviram b'nei Eliyah, ve'on ben Peles b'nei Reuven. The tribe of Reuven has three members of this rebellion. It has Dasan ve'Aviram and has On ben Peles. Why was the tribe of Reuven? So of course, as Rashi points out, as I just noted, Oy l'Rasha, Oy l'Shcheino, Korach was a neighbor of Shevet Reuven, and therefore just like Korach got in trouble, Shevet Reuven did as well. But the Chasam Sofer points out it's much deeper than that. Reuven was the first son of Yaakov. He was the Bechor. And Reuven didn't necessarily get all the power of all the 12 tribes. Yehuda did. Yosef did. So Korach played on that also. You're also left out Shevet Reuven. You're also left out Dasan ve'Aviram. You're also left out On ben Peles. And Korach was able to inspire the Bechorim, who were 250. He was able to inspire Shevet Reuven, On ben Peles, and Dasan ve'Aviram, who also should be worthy of Bechorah. So therefore, Korach creates a very strong political agenda and a strong philosophical argument that Moshe and Aaron should not be in the leadership positions, and therefore we should rebel and we should take over. So of course, as Rabbi Soloveitchik notes, one very basic difference, distinction, categorically between Parshas Korach, as opposed to Parshas Shlach with the Maragam, Parshas Bahalosecha with the Asafsum, and Parshas Bishalach is there there was fear, scare, pandemonia, frightened, and that expressed itself in the Egel Hazav, that expressed itself in the Meraglim, and that expressed itself in the lack of food and their hunger, their thirst, their dehydration fighting God. Korach was a categorically different argument. It was a political, it was a philosophical, it was a hashtafic agenda that they had, but each of the three of them, Korach, Dasan, Aviram, as well as the 250 men, were coming for three different reasons. Korach was able to bring them together at the right time. To prove this, says the Chasam Sofer, look at the end of Perek Tezayin and the death that meets them. And you'll note that it's very basic distinction. Take a look at the end of Perek Tezayin. As you see throughout the opening psukim here, in Parshas Korach, you'll see Korach, you'll see Dasan ve'Aviram, you'll see the 250 people, but never are they coming for the same reason. And here the Torah tells us at the end of Perek Tezayin, the very last pasuk, pasuk lamed hey, after Korach va'Adaso are swallowed up, and we'll go back and look at that in a moment, the Torah tells us in Perek Tezayin, pasuk lamed hey, page 826 in the Stone Chumash, ve'esh yatsa meis Hashem, a fire comes out from God. A fire consumes the 250 men who offered the incense. How did they die, these 250 men? Fire, a flame, eats them up, consumes them, and puts them to death. Who meets a very similar death? Of course, Nadav and Avihu. Because the 250 men, just like Nadav and Avihu, were very different than Korach, very different than Dasan ve'Aviram. Korach and Dasan Vavir were fighting not L'Shem Shemaim. The 250 men were fighting L'Shem Shemaim, and just like Nadav and Avihu were consumed by fire in the Mishkan when they brought the Esh Zara, the fire and flame, so to these 250 men are also consumed by the flame, by the machtos, by the sheep pans, by the ketores that Moshe told them to bring. And of course, as a result of Moshe's offering being accepted, and theirs not, they ultimately met their death. But they didn't die the same way Korach did, says the Chasam Sofer, which speaks to the fact that their rebellion was different than Korach's. So how do Korach and how do Dasan Va'aviram die? Interestingly enough, you don't see in the Psukim. The Torah never tells us that Korach was swallowed up. The Torah never tells us that Dasan Va'aviram was swallowed up. But both the Chasam Sofer as well as the Netziv say it's clear in the Psukim, although not explicit in the Psukim, that they were swallowed up and eaten alive when the ground opened up. That is the point, to teach us and to show us that they had a different death. Although Korach preached equality and Korach preached philosophy, really, Tocho was not Kibaro. He wasn't the same person externally as he was internally. And therefore, he meets the same death as Dasan ve'Aviram, the rabble-rousers, the troublemakers, and the scrapers. It's only the 250 men who die a death of Nadav and Avihu because their purpose in the rebellion was different. Although they were killed, and although they met the very same death as Korach, it was a different death. Which speaks, says the Netziv, to the very basic distinction which is taking place. Korach was able to manage and manufacture these three different factions to come together, and although they all died, their death is very different, which speaks to this point that it's a very different type of rebellion that's taking place. But if you continue looking in Perek Yud Zayin, the story doesn't end. Although Korach, and although Dasan ve'Aviram, and although the 250 men, for a total of 253 people who die, seemingly at this point, either through the earth swallowing them up, or through the fire consuming them, there's an end of the story which is often overlooked and not read carefully. If you take a look in Perek Yud Zayin, something here happens, and look at what happens. Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Vav, after the death of all of these people, the Torah tells us, page 828, Pasuk Vav, Vayilonu kol adas b'nei Yisrael mimachras al Moshe. Aha, a new complaint. And this complaint is somewhat reminiscent of the complaint of Shlach, of Kisisa, of Parshas Beshalach. Kol adas b'nei Yisrael. All of the Jewish people complain against Moshe and Aaron Lamor, Atem Hamitem Es Am Hashem, you have killed the nation. You have killed the people. And here again, it's fear and it's scare that the Jewish people react and they see the death. But who are they upset at? And what are they upset at? So of course they're upset at Moshe and Aaron. But as many Mefarshim explain, they're not upset at the death of Korach. They're not upset at the death that Dathan v'Avira met. They were worthy of the death penalty. They were worthy of the punishment. But do you know who they're upset at? They're upset at the fact that 250 men were taken because they had good intentions. They wanted to do the right thing. The same way everybody was angered and upset after Nadav and Avihu died, and that's the reason why Aaron is praised, Vayidom Aaron. Aaron was quiet. Now contrast that to this statement here, when the 250 men were burnt alive, Vayilonu kol hadas preso mimachas Moshe, everybody. All of the assembly, all of Klal Yisrael, complain on Moshe and on Aaron. Atem hamitem es am Hashem. You have murdered the Jewish people. Unbelievable. Listen to the reaction. And let's stop and pause for a moment. The Jewish people just witnessed an unbelievable miracle. It wasn't the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, and Matan Torah. Those were a revelation of God. But here, God revealed himself by killing the 250 men, the Makrivi HaKetores, who offered the Ketores, because they brought an Esh Zara, they brought a foreign flame. And the people complain against Moshe. Vayihi, Pasuk Zion, Vihikol Ha'id al Moshe Vel Aaron, when they met and when they fell on Moshe and Aaron. Vayifnul al Moibine Kisa'ana, Vayar Kod Hashem, the presence, the glory of God rested on the Mishkan. Vayadaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. And what does God tell Moshe? And this is always overlooked. Hey, Romu mitocha eidazos vachalosam karega. Says God to Moshe, leave. Separate yourself from this assembly. Just like Moshe was told by God at the beginning of Parshas Korach, Moshe, move out of the way. I'm going to create a crater in the earth and it's going to swallow up the people. Step aside, move away. The same thing happens here. God tells Moshe, stay away, I'm going to do some damage. Vayipnu al prem, and they fall on their faces. And Rav Hirsch makes the point here, look at the reaction of the leadership of Moshe. When God is ready to kill, destroy the people, and he says, Moshe, you go away, Moshe is unable. As a leader, he protects his people. Vayiplu al pnei, Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces. And by the way, this is the source, lahalacha, of what we call tachanun, nefilas apayim, vayiplu al pneim. From here, Moshe actually fell on his face like we fall when we do tachanun, and this is the source of nefilas apayim. You daven standing, you daven sitting. We daven in many different postures and in many different ways. And Moshe Rabbeinu falls on his face, literally prostrating himself to the ground as a result of hearing that God is ready to do away with the Jewish people as a result of their complaint, seeing that 250 people died. And what's going to be the danger? And what is going to be the death that this group is going to meet? Va'achale osam karega, I'm going to destroy them all. And Moshe quickly tells Aaron, grab the machta, grab these pans, place fire into them, bring a kitores, and that will allow this death that's taking place going to come to an end. And by the way, that's the reason that it's been suggested now to read Parshas HaKedores during the pandemic. Rabbi Akiva Eger, in the 1800s, in the cholera epidemic, writes in his letter to the Jewish communities in Eastern Europe who are suffering the cholera epidemic, which took thousands upon thousands of lives, to read Parshas HaKetores every single day, because that's what brings an end to plague. Because the Torah tells us here in Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'sim Ketores v'holech meher la'eda v'chaper alehem, ki yotza haketzef m'lefnei Hashem heichel hanega. The plague is beginning. The plague is beginning. Moshe says to Aaron, go offer the Ketores. Now, of course, we can't offer the Ketores. So Rekiv Eger said, let's read the Parsha of the Ketores. And that's why it's been suggested contemporarily over the last few months, somebody has extra time, it's the beginning of the Siddur, to read Parshas HaKetores, because the Torah seems to indicate here in Parshas Korach that that's what brings the end to epidemics and pandemics. So a pandemic is taking place, an epidemic is taking place here in Parshas Korach. It's not known, it's forgotten about. Most people read Korach, they say, Korach was a crater and it ate the assembly. It's not true. Maybe Korach and Dathan v'Avira were swallowed up alive, and a few of his family members. The 250 people, they were burnt alive. But the rest of the Jewish people, what happened to them? Till now, everything was fine, hunky-dory. They weren't the ones rebelling. It was 253 people rebelling. But here, they're not rebelling. They're going back to their old ways of Parshas Beshalach, Parshas Shlach, Parshas Kisisa, Parshas Bahalosha, where they're frightened. They're scared. Their friends, their comrades, their colleagues are dying at the death that they think is unworthy. And then the Torah says, "Vayikach Aaron kashedibre Moshe v'yaretz al toch hakol v'nehechel anegav." Aaron sees the plague begins. He places the ketores, and the ketores atones for the death of the plague that takes place, that takes the lives of thousands of Jews post Korach, post Dasan Ravira, post the 250 men. And here the Torah reports in Pasuk Yudah, listen to the amount of Jews who lost their lives. Vayu ha-mesim ba-magefa, arba'as ar-elef, 14,000 u-shva-meos. The amount of people that died, 14,700, says the Torah, milvad ha-mesim al-dvar Korach, besides for the people that died in the rebellion of Korach. So therefore you see a different picture here, a whole different understanding of Parshas Korach. Parshas Korach is Korach rebels by gaining the support of Dasan Vavirim on the one hand, the 250 on the other hand. The 250 men and Dasan Vavirim are two polar opposites. Dasan and Vavirim were fighting God. The 250 men wanted to come closer to God. Korach brought those two factions together, and he became the central figure, the political figure, to usurp the power of Moshe, which he felt was inappropriate because he wanted to be Kohen. He took the 250 men who were Bechorim, who wanted to serve back in the Mishkan because the Leviim had that power. So he brought those two people together, and that's what allowed him to succeed at the right time and at the right moment. He had the political success, he had the political prowess, he had the philosophical smarts and the genius and the articulate nature to allow this rebellion to succeed, but only with the elite, only with the aristocrats. The rest of the Jewish people were fine because they had the food that they needed, they had the water that they needed. And it's only later, after the 250 men die, who are Nisiyei Ha'eda, Kriyei Moed, Anshei Shem, leaders, distinguished members, that the Jewish people say, huh, we're afraid, we're scared, just like they were scared back in Parshas Kisisa when they lost Moshe Rabbeinu. V'yar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe, they saw that Moshe was delaying, Moshe didn't come back, they got scared and frightened. And here it's all of the Jewish people complaining, kvetching, frightened. And that's the magefa, that's the plague that takes the lives of all the Jewish people, besides for the death of Korach in the crater, besides for the death of Dasan Ravirim in the crater, and besides for the death of the 250 men who were burnt and eaten alive. So according to the Netziv and according to the Chasam Sofer, three different rebellions which Korach brought together, and thus that's the reason that they met different deaths. The plague is something that's an aftermath of these deaths as to what is taken care of. Therefore, the real categorical difference, and this is Rabbi Salvechik's point, between Parshas Korach and every other rebellion that we've seen in the Dor HaMidbar, that it has nothing to do with the old rebellions. The old rebellions were rebellions that were coming to satisfy basic material needs, basic human needs. Korach didn't have that. Korach wasn't interested in that. That was Bnei Yisrael's complaint thus far, and therefore Rabbi Salvechik understands that Korach is the first conspiracy. It's a watershed event in the Jewish people in the Midbar, and it brings a new beginning of potential philosophical debates that the Jewish people can have with Moshe. Korach begins that. And Moshe's ability to calm, to quietly and carefully, and in a certain way, powerfully put an end to this rebellion is the beginning of the end of those who want to fight the Torah leadership of Moshe and Aaron. And although you see that the majority of Klal Yisrael after were angered when we're upset, Moshe still has to secure his position, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu leads Moshe and leads Aaron and proves the pristine nature and the character traits of Moshe and Aaron, not just now with bringing the end of the plague, but in the psukim that you read immediately following, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe to tell Aaron, to tell Moshe to have each of the heads of the 12 tribes place a staff inside of the Mishkan, and whosoever staff is going to blossom, that individual will become the leader. year. And of course, as the pasuk says, Perach Mate Aaron, the staff of Aaron blossomed, it budded, it created flowers, and the almonds ultimately came out. And it was that miraculous event which allowed Aaron to secure his position of Kohen. It allowed Moshe to secure his position of Melech Yisrael. And although Korach argued, and the anarchy and the rebellion and the family feud which takes charge in Parshas Korach, here you see Moshe and Aaron maintain their leadership position. They allow their success to continue, and ultimately Klal Yisrael gets closer and closer to entering Eretz Yisrael, but it's not without a lot of challenges, not with a lot of difficulties. And each rebellion has a different nature to it. Of course, the majority, as we said, is a physical one, but here in Parshas Korach, it's a philosophical one, and that is the Parshas Korach. I hope this was some new thoughts and ideas to help us understand Parshas Korach. Everybody should have a great, great, great week. I saw the